Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
All right, you're listening to KILT and KILT HD2, an Odyssey station. This is the 8 at 8. We call it the Ocho. Here are your eight stories for the day.
One.
Let's start with the Astros. They lose last night to the Atlanta Braves. Braves have won the first two of this series. Last night, 6-2, the final score. Very similar game to the game on Monday where it was a low-scoring, close game going into the late innings, and then the Astros bullpen imploded. Two nights ago, it was Josh Hader. Last night, it was Sean Dubin. Forrest Whitley, we'll talk about Forrest Whitley here in just a second. He made his major league debut last night, was able to get the team out of the ninth inning. The positive story coming out of this one, I think, for the Astros, as they are mired in a 6-13 start, is that Hunter Brown was back to being a capable major league pitcher last night after giving up nine earned runs in two-thirds of an inning over the weekend. Six innings, two earned runs. Here was Hunter Brown on his bounce back performance.
That was probably the worst, if not one of the worst outings of my life. So, you know, I was chomping at the bit to get back out there. You know, I got my teammates' support, you know, leading up to this outing. So, you know, I want to go out there and try and deliver some quality innings for the club.
Yeah.
And so he does that. You know, Espada perhaps could have taken him out earlier than he did. I'm having a hard time drumming up emotion over Espada's decisions to either take guys or replace guys right now when they've used the most pitchers in Major League Baseball up to this point, 22, including Forrest Whitley, which I wish it was under different circumstances. I sure wish that Forrest Whitley could have made his debut as a starter in Major League Baseball, but now he's a reliever. He's... As of yet, we have not heard about any injuries sustained last night, right, Sean?
No.
It's been one of the longest stretches of healthy play we've ever seen out of Forrest Whitley, and he's doing it on the major league level.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the things that needs to be pointed out. Like, the last two or three injuries he sustained had nothing to do with the arm injury that wiped him out for a year. You know, like last year, he had a lat strain that ended
right.
his season. Like, in spring training this year, he had inflammation of a finger that on his pitching hand that I think it was this year. I can't remember. It might have been last season. No, last season was the lat. This season, yeah, there's a finger. They bring him up. That was cool to see, man. Like, that's 20. He was drafted in 2016, eight seasons. And look, most pitchers probably wouldn't get that kind of rope. He was the 17th overall pick in 2016.
Yeah.
So he's, you know, there's a lot of talent inside that arm somewhere. And, I'm rooting for Forrest Whitley, man. I'm rooting for him.
It's been a saga, man, because it's been everything and everything. I mean, just starting off with, at times it was weight control issues. He had a suspension for for studying too hard on a long road trip.
Was it Adderall?
It was some kind of study drug.
Okay,
That's what I call them. You know, remember
drugs.
Remember back when what was it? The GH, what was it, the date rape drug that they used to, GHB?
Rohypnol, right?
Right. Well, no, it wasn't Rohypnol. I think it was GHB. Maybe okay. The same thing. I'm going to show my ignorance here. But remember, it was kind of a popular drug, like at raves and everything back, like 10, 20 years ago. But it was also a date rape drug. But like every time an athlete got caught with it, they would say, tested positive for date rape drug.
Yeah.
That's like saying that, like, if you get pulled over in your car, you got pulled over in a vehicular homicide machine. Like,
yeah.
No, it's not always used for vehicular homicide. He was just driving too fast in this instance. Like, just because
I know my mom used the wooden spoon to punish me, but it is actually used to cook things from time to time.
Seen here with a... Seen here with his wife Amy while holding an object of domestic abuse.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So anyway, so I call them study drugs.
He
got caught with a study drug.
Yep.
Two.
JJ Watt Charity Classic rosters have been announced. They were tweeted out yesterday. If you have tickets to this thing, it's gonna be a whole lot of fun. This is the first one that JJ's done since he retired. The last one they did was in the spring of 2019.
Yeah.
So that was with JJ coming off the last time he was an All-Pro, the spring of 2019. So it's been 5 years. So now that he's retired, he's getting the old band back together. He's got a bunch of his teammates that played with him in his time. Really the kind of the heyday of the Kubiak era. A lot of those guys, Andre Johnson, Brian Cushing, Owen Daniels, Kevin Walter, guys like that. Antonio Smith is making a triumphant return, Kareem Jackson. And they're playing against the current Texans. And it's not just like the practice squad the Texans are sending over to play in this game. C.J. Stroud, yeah. Will Anderson, Stephon Diggs, Tank Dell. Nico Collins. Like, it is a bunch of big names on both sides of this thing. It's going to be a really, really fun event.
And a certain amount of showmanship there, too, especially with, having Antonio Smith there. I think people go nuts for seeing any kind of ninja. I would recommend to J.J. maybe, bring different ninja outfits at various times, perhaps.
Yes, I like
What's the actual date of it?
It's May 4th, and it starts at 6 p.m. It's at Constellation Field. It benefits JJ's foundation, which raises money for after-school programs in underprivileged communities, like for sports programs with underprivileged schools. It's a really good cause. It's a great event. I've been to a handful of these softball games. They're great. They're doing a home run derby at 6 p.m. We may need to handicap the home run derby at 6 p.m.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Not at 6 p.m. today. Like the home run derby starts at 6 p.m. that day. We may need to handicap that one.
JJ might be in his best home run hitting form ever because as he told you and I off air when we were chatting that he's only a few pounds lighter than when he played, but he definitely looks kind of like a more
flexible,
live
build.
Yeah. He's not all thick through the neck and everything.
Yeah.
So yeah, he might. I don't think he's not lifting the same kind of weights. So. He might have a better swing.
Yeah.
We'll
see. The guys that used to crush Matt Schaub was the guy that used to kill it in the home run derby at JJ's softball game. Schaub was a beast in the home run derby.
He was, wasn't he? I forgot about that. Yep. Yeah.
He was really he and Eric Winston, they were beasts in the home run derby for sure.
Three.
All right, NBA play, and we'll get to these quick. The Lakers win last night. They beat the New Orleans Pelicans, so they move on. They'll be the 7th seed. In the Western Conference, they'll play the Denver Nuggets. So good for the Lakers for not laying down. There had been talk about that. Like, should the Lakers rest their starters to avoid the Nuggets as the 2 seed and try to land the 8 seed instead of the 7? Like, all this talk in the NBA about teams trying to finesse their win. The Cleveland Cavaliers actually did it. They tanked a game over the weekend so they could avoid the Knicks or somebody. I can't remember what it is, but... good for the Lakers.
Basically, the entire regular season has become nothing but a big warm-up to, like, exactly how you handle the play-in.
And maneuvering what seed you are and whatnot. So, good for the Lakers for going out and winning and trying and saying, you know what, we're going to take on the Denver Nuggets as the 2 seed, and we're gonna do our best to beat them. Probably the biggest story coming out of this game, Seth, is Zion Williamson leaving with an injury because the Pelicans now have to play the Kings in the next, basically the final play-in game to get the 8 seed.
Yeah.
And Zion was having a night last night, man. 40 points, 11 rebounds when he went out of the game.
What was the injury with Zion?
Left leg soreness. is what it's been categorized.
A lot of real estate on that leg.
Yeah.
It's hard to say exactly where that would be.
It's a long exam.
The surface area is quite large.
That's right.
That's like trying to find somebody that's lost in the ocean.
He drowned somewhere.
Yeah,
I don't know. Soreness, it's here somewhere. Yeah.
Four.
Warriors lose. You probably got that from my little tease there saying that the Kings won. But the Warriors lose. And driving in today, I'm thinking, that's a good sports radio question. Is the dynasty over? And before I could even utter the question, Seth Payne, astute as he is, points out, why are we talking about the dynasty being over for a 10 seed in the Western Conference? And I'm like, well, I'm just going to scratch this topic off.
Well, no. I think it's still a valid question.
I think your point is a phenomenal one, though.
No, my point was it was an indication of how unserious people are about the regular season.
Yeah.
That it actually is worth, I mean, you can, a play-in team winning the championship is in play, So it's not... I don't think it's an unfair question about whether it's whether it signifies the end of the Warriors era. Yes, I do believe it's over.
Yes,
I believe that. Like, as Draymond Green's doing a Benjamin Button when it comes to like maturity on a basketball court. He's getting dumber and dumber as he gets older. He's getting more tempestuous.
Yeah. Yes.
Can't stop using that word.
Two days in a row, Ben. Tempestuous. Didn't even know it was a word.
Fancy
pants. Yeah.
Temperamental. You know why? I was trying to say temperamental and somehow tempestuous came out. So, no, he is. He is.
Absolutely.
So, they're done. They're done as a dynasty.
Yep.
I'm calling my shot, and it doesn't feel like all that bold of a shot. How many points did Klay Thompson have yesterday, Sean?
Zero, same as me and you. How many shots? He took more shots than we did. 10 shots. He's 0 for 10. Yeah.
He was infinitely inefficient.
Yes, that's right.
How you like that, Lacob?
Yes. Take that, you tempestuous bastard.
Five.
Number five, Blake Griffin retiring after 14 seasons.
No!
Former number one overall pick. Blake Griffin probably has one of the more sizable gaps between star power, perceived star power, perceived being goodness.
Yeah.
He made a bunch of All-Star games. To actual, how much did he affect real winning? You know what I mean? Clippers had some decent teams while he was on there, but Blake Griffin never even got close to sniffing anything resembling a relevant playoff run.
Was he known and remembered mostly for being the guy that proved that Chris Paul wasn't actually all that great a leader?
Maybe. And I remember the shot of he and DeAndre Jordan when they found out Chris Paul was coming to the Clippers.
Yeah.
And they showed somebody, some media type was following them with a camera, and one of them was on the phone getting the news, and they hung up, and they were dapping each other. Lob City. Oh, it's going to be Lob City. Lob City. And they're good. It was a nice little basketball team they had right there for a little while. But Blake Griffin retired. Good on commercials, too. I thought he was...
Right, good on commercials helps a lot. Yeah, That's why I like Baker Mayfield.
Absolutely, same.
When all I knew of him was a squealing pig, getting arrested for whatever he got arrested for, and just being kind of... being awesome, but also kind of annoyingly brash on the football field.
Yeah.
I didn't like him all that much. I liked him because of the insurance commercials.
I love that you point out that he squealed like a pig when the police were chasing him every time.
If you're going to get arrested, man,
you
got to...
make it look good.
Yeah. He's been very open about that and everything. What's it? No, don't fight.
Yeah,
did you say
fight? No, I said don't fight.
Oh, yeah. Don't put up some fight, but go down like a man.
Yeah,
keep
stone face. You know what I mean? Yeah, don't cry.
Six.
Trevor Lawrence.
Especially when you know you're going to get off.
Oh,
that's the worst thing. It's like, come on.
Yeah, what are you crying about, man?
Dude, you're the quarterback at Oklahoma.
Yeah.
This is going to work out all right for you, okay?
Oh, and you don't have the money for a good lawyer? Okay. Speaking of quarterbacks, Jacksonville quarterback Trevor Lawrence. This is going to be one of the more fun stories to follow through the summer, Seth. Trevor Lawrence, and does he get that contract extension that everybody was anointing him with after year two of his career? After he took the Jags to the playoffs, won a playoff game, heading into year three, I think people thought it was just a done deal that Trevor Lawrence was going to be the next big quarterback to get a contract extension after year three. He said he's had preliminary discussions with the team about a potential contract extension, but isn't spending any time worrying about what that could look like. Quote, there's definitely been some conversations as far as where that's at now. It's not really my focus. I'd love to obviously be a Jag for as long as possible. We love it here, and I love where we're headed as an organization. I feel like I'm just getting better every year, and my best ball is definitely ahead of me. So he claims he's not thinking about it. Do you think that Trevor Lawrence gets a contract this offseason? total coin flipper for me, man.
It really is, because it's never a question of whether he should get a contract or not. Those days are long gone.
Yeah, right.
We're in the days of Daniel Jones getting a contract.
Yes.
Great, you know, yes. So, based on the Daniel Jones precedent, I would say he does. The only thing that might prevent him from getting a contract is if the Jaguars are doing what they should, which is to give him kind of a Daniel Jones type of contract. It's lucrative, but it's shorter term,
yeah. And
it's not going to hamstring them forever. Or does he say, no, I'm going to roll the dice on myself
and see what happens.
Trevor Lawrence feels a little bit like take the safe money guy.
Maybe.
I don't know if he feels like a Dak Prescott gamble on myself guy.
Yep, we'll see. It's going to be fun to follow this summer.
Seven.
The WNBA shattered records for the WNBA draft viewership, which stands to reason because I had no idea what time of year the WNBA draft was. Turns out it's in late April, and people were watching because of Caitlin Clark. Caitlin Clark delivered another television milestone as ESPN's coverage of the draft on Monday night averaged a record 2.45 million viewers. Viewership peaked at 3.09 million. I would imagine that was while Caitlin Clark was on the screen. But just to give you an idea, the audience was four times as many viewers when compared to the 2023 draft. The 2023 draft drew, Seth, a little over 500,000. They drew 2.5 million, nearly 2.5 million viewers. I don't know that the same effect is going to... I mean, look, Caitlin Clark can only play in a single game each week.
Right.
Each night. She can't be everywhere. But she's going to be on TV a whole lot.
Okay, sometimes you have to check your own memory of history and what have you, because, you know, Michael Jordan is credited with modernizing or turning the NBA into what it is now and just, like, amping up the star power that much more. But it's not like he started off at an MVP caliber pace, but that star power was still, it was something.
Oh yeah.
Right. You know, he had his own shoe and everything already. So Caitlin Clark, how much of it is tied to her actually becoming a dominant player within the first few years? In the meantime, can her star power kind of be a bridge for that? She might end up, she might end up transforming the way a lot of people look at the league, but it's got to be tied to performance on some level, obviously.
This would be my caution, is that there's going to be huge viewership numbers for her first several games.
Yeah.
And then eventually she's going to have to be good at basketball. But there will be a big pop, I would caution people, don't make a big deal out of that. You know, like, there'll be a curiosity watch.
Don't make a big deal out of that, except that I do think just when you watch, like, you watch how passionate young girls and women are about her, that, like, I don't think that fandom goes away. I think there will be a lot of, you know, like, sticking by her no matter what. So people think about this stuff too much, like, whether the WNBA is going to steal away from some other viewership or something. I don't think it's that. I think there might be a whole new group of people watching professional sports that maybe were only interested in, you know, girls basketball or women's college basketball before that.
Eight.
Last one, John Sterling, New York Yankees play-by-play guy. This is kind of a strange story. Retired out of nowhere this week. Like, literally, the Yankees put out a press release like John Sterling is retiring effective immediately. And John Sterling, for people who don't know, we're going to play some audio here that will remind you of who John Sterling is. But he's a long, long time. He's broadcast over 5,000 Yankee games. I mean, he's been there for decades. There was a consecutive streak he had of over 5,000 Yankee games that he hadn't missed on the radio. Mm-hmm. He's their radio play-by-play voice. Didn't miss a game for like 5,000 games. Yeah, like a crazy streak of games he had.
Wow.
Yeah. So here, for those who don't recall who John Sterling is, now you'll remember.
It is high. It is far. It is gone. It is first Yankee at bat. Giancarlo. Non si può stopparlo. It is a Stantonian home run. A two-run blast to right center in his first Yankee at bat.
Yeah, I picked the dumbest one out to play of all the home run calls he had. He's the Yankee announcer, all right?
I started to, much like the syndicated sitcom from the 80s, Small Wonder, about the girl robot child laborer.
Right.
I hated it so much that I would hate watch it every weekend. John Sterling turned into hate listening for me.
Yeah.
Like, I had, I hate it so much, and yet I'm drawn to it.
I got that home run call from a 7-minute YouTube of all his home run calls, like all his individual, like from the last 10 years of the different Yankees. I watched the whole damn thing. The whole thing.
Yeah.
Like, small wonder. Absolutely.
I saw, did you see the, Greg Kucharski? He used to be the ESPN beat writer for the Titans, but he's from New York City originally.
Oh, yeah.
He just torched John Sterling on Twitter.
I saw
He was a Yankees fan.
Yeah.
Or he is a Yankees fan, but he basically said something like, it'd be nice if it was somebody who ever actually told us something about the game.
Yeah, I was like, wow, man.
I don't know if John Sterling is... any Yankees fans listening, tell us. Text in 713-572-4610. Did you guys actually hate John Sterling?
Right.
Or was that just Paul Kucharski, I think.
Right, yeah. Yes, Paul Kucharski.
Paul Kucharski.
A Texans, you know me, I'm always looking for tiny little signs of progress. In a season where they made huge progress, tiny little sign of progress from D'Amico Ryan's press conference on Monday that I've not heard anybody talk about yet. I'll tell you what it is coming up next.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medella is your reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Sports Radio 610 presents... Payne and Pendergast.
The biggest thing I think, Kim, from year one to year two is you have to watch guys who've had a lot of success. Right, guys, you can't fall into a trap of that you've made it, right? Just because you have success in year one, that doesn't garner that you're going to instantly have success in year two. Right? You still have to put in even more work, right? Because now all you have a year worth of tendencies on tape. Other teams around the league are watching you. They're kind of honing in on what you do well. So how are you going to attack your offseason and truly focus on improving your craft and being better than you were in year one? Guys can't, you can't fall asleep to, I did it one year, it's easy, and you relax your second year. That's the biggest thing I've seen where guys kind of have that drop in their second years where they relax and they think they have that I made it moment. Nobody's ever made it. You continue to put the work in, you dive in even harder because you've had success.
That's D'Amico Ryans on Monday talking to the media, guarding against complacency in year two. I don't have major concerns that this team is going to rest on laurels or feel full of itself. I think from coach to the leaders on the team, I think this is a team wired to handle the success they had last year.
Yeah, and there's no shortage of cautionary tales going right to the Jacksonville Jaguars last year.
Bingo.
Where, man, everybody was all super excited about how simple and easy and straightforward it was going to be. The Jags had figured it out, and Trevor Lawrence was the real deal, and it was just an easy march into the playoffs. And they ended up sucking.
Yep.
Yeah. Turns out Trevor Lawrence can't play injured.
Yeah, right. He was banged
up. I swear,
up.
No, Sean, like, yeah. I swear, I've never heard so many excuses for an NFL quarterback. They're all injured. All of them. CJ had a separated shoulder the entire damn year. But, like, with Trevor Lawrence, all of a sudden, it's like, well, he had four different injuries. Yeah, and he played.
Right.
If he's playing, he needs to be good.
Right.
Okay.
I think that's I totally agree with what you're saying. I think you hit
you're
on
damn
it.
Damn right
I,
you do, Sean.
I think it's if you know what's good for you, I think it's the multitude, why people... I think it's a combination of the multitude, and I think there's a lot of people that are probably trying to talk Trevor Lawrence generational quarterback into existence still. You know, it's...
Yeah.
I think there's, but I, yeah, if you're out on the field, you're judged by what you put out there for sure. So this dawned on me yesterday as I was doing my podcast and doing the solo part of it by myself and just kind of going back through some of the takeaways from Monday with D'Amico and with Will and with CJ in those press conferences. And it dawned on me in the middle of talking about D'Amico takeaways, there was not a single, and I view this as a sign of progress. There was not a single direct question to D'Amico Ryans 10 days before the draft about the draft. And what are you going to do in the draft? What are you going to do in the second round? Who are you going to take? Yeah. Who are you looking at? What position? Nothing. Nothing.
And it's obvious they don't have a first round pick. And as soon as you start asking questions about the draft outside the first round, especially, it turns into a big exercise in, do you guys take best player available? And then the team says, of course we take best player available. And then they go into, they draft for need. And it's just, and on we go. I think that, the first round is where it's at when it comes to the big ticket items that make the news with the draft. It's a whole lot of, what are you going to ask? How about we do this? Do you want to go down? I'll give you a one-sentence answer to every question that was asked, if it was answered the way that would, appease us. Or, it would feel like D'Amico gave an answer that was, straightforward or juicy or giving up a tidbit.
Okay, so what am I doing here? Am I asking
So,
you?
Ask me about, the first question was, how do I feel about the current roster?
Oh, okay, yeah.
D'Amico.
So, D'Amico, how do you feel about the current roster?
And I say I'll answer all these in one sentence.
Okay.
It's aight. We've got...
it's one sentence. You're cut off. It's aight.
Oh, okay. It's aight, comma. As you can see, the defensive tackle's position is a mess, and we kind of botched a trade, so we had to scramble. And no, it's not ideal, okay? So we feel really good about some parts, but there's still some holes that we got to fill. Frankly, I don't know exactly what we're going to get out of Jalen Petrie this year. This is all a comma. One big run on. Okay.
You were doing good with a run-on sentence there for a while.
Yeah.
So and.
D'Amico would never ramble on the extent that I can.
No, D'Amico's the perfect soundbite for a coach. His cuts are all between 20 and 35 seconds to a T. He's the best.
Next question, Juno.
You ready? What can Stephon Diggs add to this roster?
Bling. Lots of bling. You know, you used to see back when he used to put his chains on Kirk Cousins and everything. I feel like CJ can use a little bit of that.
Okay.
If I were to answer it just 100% and completely honestly, frankly, it's not Stephon Diggs alone. It's the combination of Stephon Diggs, Tank Dell, and Nico Collins.
There you go.
And and Tank Dell is the truth.
Always looking to add playmakers. There were 18 questions. I'm not
going to
ask
all of them.
Yeah, I think the closest thing, not asking about the draft. I do think you're right. You're right about the first round thing. For sure, you're right about the first round thing. I was just surprised in going back. I didn't feel it in the moment, but in going back, I'm I am a little surprised he wasn't asked, what do you think of this crop of defensive linemen coming out?
He was about specific players. He was asked about what he's looking for in defensive tackles.
Right.
And he said explosiveness, which... Honestly, and then the most meaningful thing he said when it came to the draft itself, I think, was he said that we're looking for explosive players, and then he gave a weight range of saying, I've seen anybody from 285 to 315, or maybe he said 325. I do think that is the range he's looking at. I think that a Tavondre Sweat probably doesn't appeal to him as much as I've tried to shoehorn that in. And it's the tough thing is the guys who weigh 315 and are super explosive – tend to go in the top five picks of the draft.
Yeah,
those guys aren't there this year. So there's a lot of the 295. There's a lot of guys that are listed at 302 because they drank a lot of water at the combine, but they're actually 295.
Yeah.
So that it is where it gets interesting. There's a pretty big pool that they can pull from. I thought one of the more relevant questions, and I want to say it was DJ Bieniemy that asked this, was when he asked D'Amico, just all right, how do you reconcile Stephon Diggs' drop off in production over the last third of last year versus what you're hoping to get out of him?
Yeah. And
D'Amico basically said, if you watch film, we don't believe there was a drop off. And I agree with that. I think Stephon Diggs, and from talking to people in Buffalo, there was a shift in how they were operating on offense, but it's not like Stephon Diggs all of a sudden was different physically or wasn't winning downfield or anything. They ran a different offense from the Denver game on.
Did you see Landry tweeted? I know you saw this.
Yeah.
I'm very anxious for In the Loop today. This is a tease for In the Loop. This is Landry Locker tweeted this last night.
I transcribed this, so okay. Sorry. I know that my typing was kind of hurried.
That's okay.
This is what Landry tweeted out last night.
Yeah.
He said, okay, Brandon Scott just put the following on the show prep doc. O.J. Simpson's death got me thinking about Damian Pierce. I can explain. And then Landry says, where in the heck is this going?
I feel the same.
O.J. Simpson's death got me thinking about Damian Pierce.
Okay. How do you connect the two? If you want to text in, how is Brandon Scott connecting the death of O.J. Simpson to
it's
Damian
be something
Pierce?
To do with altered perceptions of a running back.
Yeah, it's got to be. Right? There's got to be a running back element to this. Yeah,
yeah. Like O.J.'s reputation took kind of a hit.
Yeah.
Midway through his life. You guys can Google it if you don't know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
His reputation as a running back never changed.
No.
His ability to run in the snow was good throughout his entire career. I don't know.
Here's my guess, and I'm guessing I'll be wrong, but this is the best I can come up with. O.J. Simpson became more known for something else other than being a good running back later on in his life. Damian Pierce was once known as a good running back. It wasn't for as long as O.J. Simpson, nor for the yardage of O.J. Simpson, but there was a period of time. Maybe it's that in this next phase, Damian Pierce becomes known for something else. Not necessarily killing two people like O.J., but maybe like returning kicks. You know, maybe in this new kickoff return age that we're in, a running back maybe fits even better in this.
This is the only thing that I get nervous about is when I watch these newfangled kickoffs in the United Football League or what have you.
I know what you're going to say, yeah.
It looks a lot like a zone running scheme.
It sure does.
It looks after Damian Pierce had this brief and glorious moment where he had a kickoff return, and in the post-game show, he told one Sean T. Pendergast and Clint middle initial unknown Sterner that the kickoff return is kind of like the run schemes that he knows and loves, where it's like, oh, okay, here's the blocking, the hole, this is what I'm going to hit. And then what do they do in the offseason? Boom! It's like when the Bears, you remember when the Bears got all upset that they changed the kickoff return rules and everything because they had an all-pro kickoff returner.
Hall of Fame, he's going in this year,
Paid on the roster, yeah, so I think that Damian Pierce kind of got screwed over by the rules change.
Wow. Yeah, maybe so.
That's a good point, Brandon Scott.
Yeah.
If that is indeed your if that is your point. If not, then it's stupid.
We'll see. How about
Brandon
this?
K. Scott.
Dude, I'm looking at I don't know that other teams do this. I'm looking, and I know the Texans didn't do this last year. The Commanders are picking second, like the Texans were last year, and I'm looking at our TV in the studio. The Commanders are hosting Jaden Daniels, Drake May, J.J. McCarthy, and Michael Penix all on the same day.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. I'm fascinated by this.
Yes.
If they're trying to run some social experiment here to see how
like
they all interact
dish.
Or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just like see if there's going to be a fight.
Right.
What are they like? They stick them in a room with a closed circuit TV and like they just steadily start increasing the heat just to see who. You know what I'm envisioning, Sean?
Yeah.
The right stuff. The book and the movie about the space program early in the days.
Yeah.
And like they didn't know. Like they started this astronaut program and they didn't know what the hell astronauts really needed to do or like how much like what they needed to be trained for. So they just started the screening processes. Let's treat them like crap as much as possible and see which ones wilt or can't handle it or what have you. I feel like they're going to do that. They're going to put them in a big old centrifuge or something. You know, see which one of these guys can hack being a Washington Commander.
Dude, I'm looking up at the screen. I see these four names and it says, you know, such and such visiting. I'm like, oh, probably over the next 4 days. No, visiting today. They're all visiting in 1 day. It's crazy. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you here on a Wednesday. All right, Tom Brady and Bill Belichick have largely dominated the last 2 decades. Are people trying to pour cold water and phase the two of them out of the game altogether? That is next.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast. Right,
could we see comebacks from Tom Brady and Bill Belichick? If Jeremy Fowler and Arthur Blank have anything to say about it, the answer is going to be hell no. But we'll get to Belichick in a second. Here was Tom Brady on the Deep Cut podcast. This got a lot of run last week into this week when he was asked towards the end of the podcast about any chance that you would be coming back to play this season.
One day there's a situation, right? Maybe it's the 49ers, maybe, you know, heading to the playoffs. Offense is great.
Patriots.
Somebody.
Raiders. Look, could be. You never know.
God forbid somebody goes down. Would you pick up that phone?
I'm not opposed to it. If they would, I don't know if they're going to let me if I become an owner in the NFL team, but I don't know if, I don't know. I'm always going to be in good shape. I'll always be able to throw the ball. So to come in for a little bit, like MJ coming back, I don't know if they let me, but I wouldn't be opposed to it.
Okay. So that leaving the door open there, that got a lot of run last week. I asked Ted Johnson. Teddy ended up texting me back, Seth, and said, oh, yeah, we were talking about it this morning. He sent me a picture of him on probably with the morning show on 98.5 there, and they were chopping it up about Brady up there.
I would imagine if I were in New England, my immediate and first thought would be, sure. I mean, if Tom Brady wants to come in and be a bridge QB and, you know, maybe make a run of it. Now, I don't know if the Patriots, frankly, are where the best football fit for Tom Brady right this moment. If I were Tom Brady, I'm only coming back if I've got, like, a team that's fit and ready to be a championship
team. Oh, yeah,
You know, he went to Tampa, and he had a couple stud receivers there. And, you know, and they had built up the defense. It just it was different. It was different. I don't know about the Patriots right now. I think that the way that he answered so casually and easily there, like he didn't even really have to think about it. And I told you, I went back and watched that entire podcast.
Yep.
It was an hour and 5 minutes long, the actual interview part. And right at an hour and 5 minutes is when that question was asked. So it was either, I want to say it felt almost like it was a plant, like it was a planted question, like that was going to be the last question. And maybe he was floating his name out there right a few weeks before the draft when maybe you put the seed in people's brains and some of the teams that are thinking about a quarterback start thinking, well, if we want to trade up, you know, like a team like, I don't know, perhaps the Vikings, if they want to trade up, but it doesn't work out, they know in the back of their mind, like, oh, there is the Brady.
There is that.
Scenario.
Yeah, he is better than Sam Darnold. Yeah, that kind of thing.
And the one thing that Brady had mentioned was, you know, if he becomes an owner, so for those of you who don't know what he's talking about there, he put in a bid to become a, I think like a 10% owner of
big
the
chunk,
Raiders.
Yeah.
It's pretty big. That would be like a $600 million chunk.
Well, they were charging him way less than that. That was the big issue that other owners had. Yeah, they were.
So the NFL is, they have to approve him as an owner. And then if he were approved as an owner, currently you're not allowed to play for a team if you own a part of any team.
That's
either.
Right.
Even if you own that team. Even though I think that would be a splendid idea if guys had to actually have ownership shares in the teams that they play for.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Yeah, so like that's there'd be some obstacles, and I wonder if he just wants to, at the very least, keep his options open.
Maybe.
So he's kind of throwing it out there, maybe trying to like rattle the cage a little bit to get the NFL to move on something.
The people at Fox have to be beside themselves when they hear this stuff. Like, what the hell, man? Like, we have to
mention Greg Olson.
Greg Olson,
all right, buddy.
Yeah,
like,
thanks,
all
man.
Right, yeah. Good job throwing the little football around all those years, but come on. The adults are in the room, and I'm the best dude there is right now at Fox.
Well, if we're to believe Jeremy Fowler of ESPN, Greg Olson may be able to rest easy just in terms of clarity of what it's going to look like coming up this year.
I've heard minimal traction about this in NFL circles, and I've talked to several scouts who said, like, he didn't look very motivated 2 years ago. I know he had some numbers that we're talking about, but he looked pretty cooked and had like he had no interest in taking hits in the pocket. So we're now talking about 2 years later, he's ready to suit up, so I don't know. He's supposed to be a part owner of the Raiders eventually.
Well, where are we with that now?
He could just.
He's supposed to be that. He's supposed to be the lead analyst on Fox. He's supposed to be a lot of things.
Supposed to be a lot of things.
He's sitting there getting a haircut.
He's a quarterback.
He's talking about coming back and playing football at the end of the day.
He's going to be 47. I don't know.
He's getting a haircut. What kind of football player gets a haircut? sitting there getting a haircut when you should be training?
If you didn't know that, if you didn't know the Brady quotes came from a barber podcast, you would have no clue. Like, in that, he's getting a haircut. Like, what are you talking about?
I would think, no, honestly, I would think it was some kind of contract maneuvering.
Yeah, he's taking
a haircut
to
come back to the Raiders or something.
Yeah.
Or maybe he's taking a haircut on how much he's going to pay or whatever.
Yeah.
Okay, now here's the thing. Two things to remember. One, Jeremy Fowler was also the guy who, like, very snidely went along with the narrative that the Texans weren't going to take a quarterback.
Yep.
So he doesn't always know what's going on
True.
With the various teams.
Yep.
Two, and it's this. Yes, Brady looked like he didn't want to be out there 2 years ago. I think sometimes people go a little too far in trying to stay out of people's personal business when you have to remember and recognize he was going through a damn divorce that year.
Yep.
He mysteriously missed time during training camp.
Yeah.
I don't feel like I'm even speculating here. Has anybody in the history of divorces ever gone through a divorce without it affecting them somehow at work? You know?
No. I can tell you, no.
Yeah, like,
firsthand, yes.
I'm sure there's a few, actually.
Yeah. For some, it's probably
very
liberating.
Yeah. Who, like, are, like, the whole reason there's a divorce is because nothing affects this
One
dude.
Less
yeah.
thing, yeah.
Yeah. I'm not saying that's exactly what happened. And obviously, yeah, he was 45 years old at the time. There's going to be a decline. But I do think the one thing during that podcast that he had said, not directly related to coming back, but he was just talking about his mental preparation and everything.
Yeah.
He said that he never felt in his career, it was very rare that he felt that when they lost because he hadn't prepared enough.
Yeah.
Like he always he could be okay with things as long as he knew that he had prepared and done everything, that sometimes you're just not going to win the game. And I wonder if he thinks back to that final season of his where he's going through a divorce and, you know, discussions about custody, whatever, everything that goes into that. And the very reason reportedly for the divorce was because he decided to play football again. That he probably, I wouldn't be surprised if there were multiple games in that season where he looked back on it and thought, like, man, I just really, that wasn't me.
Yeah,
that's not my
routine.
That's not my preparation. I couldn't put the preparation
in. Maybe now he can. You know, now he's got all that behind him. Let's get to this Belichick thing. Belichick, who we know wanted to be, well, he talked to the Falcons about being their head coach, right?
Yeah.
He interviewed with Arthur Blank. That was the only team that got to that stage with Belichick to where it looked like he was a heavy favorite to get that job at one point.
So there's this article that just came out on ESPN.com. I saw this by Ari Myrov, the kid that does all the
aggregating.
Aggregating. But they did this report, and these are the main bullet points. It's just crazy. Been a lot of discussion about how Belichick didn't get a job this year, wasn't offered a job, what have you. According to the synopsis of this article, Falcons owner Arthur Blank called Patriots owner Robert Kraft after his first meeting with Bill Belichick this offseason for their head coaching job. Kraft warned Blank not to trust Belichick.
Wow.
A source close to Belichick said Kraft was a big part of why the Falcons passed on him on hiring him this offseason. And a spokesman for Kraft strongly denied that Kraft said anything disparaging whatsoever. This is after, according to this article, Belichick assured Arthur Blank in the two meetings that he wasn't seeking the total control he had for most of his 24 seasons in New England. He pledged to work with the team's existing group of decision makers, including general manager Terry Fontenot. Belichick also knew that Blank had checked his references with a group that included Patriots owner Bob Kraft and his son Jonathan. So I'll tell you what. This does fall in line with what a lot of people from New England or who follow the Patriots dynasty have believed. Like that most recent documentary, Sean, that you watched.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me if it sounds like a lot of people feel like it was almost a hit piece on Belichick, that it painted Kraft and Brady in extremely flattering tones, but that it was kind of brutal on Belichick.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think that's a fair categorization or characterization of the documentary for sure. Yeah, now I don't know to what degree that was intentional. Like, I don't, you know, this, you know, unfortunately for Belichick, people watch that documentary. This is now their version of the truth, you know? That Belichick was the heel in all this, and that Tom Brady and Robert Kraft were victims is probably overstating it a little bit, but they, you know, there was something more noble to their efforts than with Bill Belichick.
So in the actual article, it says, in a conversation with Blank, Kraft delivered a stark assessment of Belichick's character, according to a source who spoke to two people. a close Kraft friend and a longtime Belichick confidant.
Okay.
The source quoted the Belichick source as saying, Robert called Arthur to warn him not to trust Bill. That account was backed up, the source said, by the close Kraft friend.
Okay. So who's the bad guy here? Is it Belichick? Is it Kraft? Is anybody a bad guy? Like, is it
Kraft?
Yeah,
it's Kraft. Kraft is the Jerry
Jones role.
Shouldn't
have done that.
Like, dude, yeah, you gotta, man, just shut your trap. It's been 20 years. Like, you owe more to Arthur. Do you owe more to Arthur Blank than you do to Belichick?
I think sometimes these owners feel like that fraternity of ownership does carry more weight than loyal employee. I'm not saying all owners are like that. But we know it's kind of a boys' club, man. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that the Kraft somehow feels like he's been through just as much with Arthur Blank negotiating collective bargaining agreements and whatnot as he's been with Belichick winning six Super Bowls. You know,
I feel like, you know, like just as it is with Jerry Jones, Sean, there's always that element with a billionaire, a self-made billionaire, where you just there is something in them that is just so hyper-competitive, or oftentimes they're so hyper-competitive. And part of that sometimes is that they want to be the one.
Yeah.
Like, I need to be the one that gets the credit.
Yep.
I need to, people need to know and understand, or just because they genuinely believe that. And I feel like this is no less petty than all of the things that Jerry Jones couldn't let go of, if this is true, that Bob Kraft just, you can't just let an awesome thing be an awesome thing and then move on your way. You know, I don't know, man. I don't know.
Yeah. God, he makes me feel kind of bad for Belichick. I can't believe, what is this feeling that I'm feeling right now?
It kind of makes me want to see Belichick come back and get a job in the AFC.
Yeah, a little bit, right? Okay. I don't know,
and
man.
And at the same time, I'd kind of like Belichick to be able to enjoy his later years in life.
No, I need him there for my enjoyment, not his enjoyment.
I need him to step away from the fray. I want him to be down there fishing with Jimmy Johnson, you know? I want him to get just super, like, way too tan and just be out there drinking beer every day with Jimmy Johnson.
We've got two recent examples now this week where if you're looking for a rule to live by, if you're waiting for good news, take a nap. That's when the good stuff happens. We've got two examples of that now in 2 days. That's coming up next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL Draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.